Greetings, this is Nigeria Anderson with UrbanBuzzMag.com, and I have Roderick Harper on the line with me. Now, I'm telling you, I have become a fan of this gentleman's music, and what you're going to love is the same thing I love. So let's just jump right on into it. He sings both R&B and jazz. Now, those are two different styles, one more instrumental and one more vocal. What's the draw for you, and do you prefer one over the other?
Well, I love to sing, period.
Okay.
That's the main thing. And I grew up listening to all kinds of music.
Uh-huh.
By the time I got to, was finishing high school, going into college, jazz started to, begin to appeal to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I started getting tired of singing. Everybody wants you to sing exactly like the record and stuff like that, where jazz gave me an opportunity to express what I was actually hearing in my head.
Okay.
So that was like the avenue led me towards jazz, but I love them both.
Okay, that's fair. So I want to just go back a little bit. Tell us about your previous projects, your favorite song for each one, if you have one, you may not have written it yet. And what have you learned about yourself to push the new project 2702, which is your seventh or sixth project?
Six.
Okay, great. So we got time. Bring us up to date.
My first album, Beautiful Beginning, that was conceptualized probably around 1999.
Uh-huh.
And came into fruition it was released in 2021. I was in Chicago at the time. I had already experienced trying to, sign to big labels and stuff like that. Certain opportunities came by, but it didn't quite work out.
Okay.
So I was like, well, I want to really, get out there. So a friend of mine actually owned, a small rap label, and he believed in me. He's like, well, I'll release your record or whatever. So I started working with him and another friend of ours, who was an actual, jazz lover, quote unquote. He said, that he would take it on. So he actually bought out my agreement. I wouldn't even call it a contract.
Right.
From my other friend. And that's when the journey began. So he pretty much gave me a lot of free reign of how I wanted to do things. Like I said, I was living in Chicago. I told him I definitely wanted to record it in New Orleans because, I knew most musicians and that environment was conducive to what I was trying to do.
Okay.
So I ended up recording there. I think you said, what was your favorite song off of there?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
My favorite song is a song called Clean Air. That was one of the first songs I learned from one of my musical mentors when I was in college. His name was Alvin Baptiste. He's a very famous jazz clarinetist. He used to play with the Ray Charles Orchestra. He also played with Cannonball Adderley. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but he's worked with a lot of different people.
Okay.
But he was over the Jazz Institute at Southern University where I went, and that was one of the first songs I learned is one of his originals. So whenever I perform, I always perform that song. It's very special.
Right.
And it's grown with me
over
the years.
Okay.
So that's the first album.
Second album.
Yeah. The second album is The Essence Of. So The Essence Of was kind of interesting because I was still living in Chicago. I wanted to, for lack of a better expression, I wanted to try and bridge some of the misconceptions about between what we call jazz and R&B. So one of the things that I tried to do was to try to get more youthful cover. So I had somebody dress me with this hat and this whole get up, trying to, appeal to a younger audience.
Right.
I was young at the time, but
right.
And I do not like that cover. But we were trying to reach a certain audience.
So, did it work?
Yeah.
It did.
So that
work.
Album was produced by one of my friends, Nicholas Payton, jazz trumpeter. And also the father of what is now known as BAM, Black American Music.
Okay.
Which we like to use instead of the word jazz, but, I'm not a stickler for that, but
right.
it's basically because it was our music originally.
Right, gotcha.
So that he helped with that album. If it were not for him, he really like helped develop that album and taught me a lot in terms of working in the studio and recording and also pushing me vocally, which I appreciated.
Right.
My favorite song off of there would be my version of Naima, which is a John Coltrane song.
Okay.
With lyrics written by a gentleman by the name of John Hendricks, who is considered to be one of the fathers of vocalese. So, yes.
Okay.
That's the second one.
No, I'm loving this because you're helping another independent artist ride the journey to know that this is not 1, 2, 3. As much as people want to social media, oh, you're going to get a million likes and oh, you're going to get put on if you go viral. You know, it takes work. So I thank you for sharing with us. So go right ahead.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah, I started out before MySpace.
All right, come on. Let's go.
All right. So anyway, so the third one was Perfect Imperfections.
Okay.
So Perfect Imperfections came at a pivotal point in my life. I had been married for quite a while, and I was no longer married.
Uh-huh.
And I moved back down to New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
So I basically had to start from scratch.
Okay.
And I knew that I was going to have to start from scratch.
Right.
But in the process of that, dealing with like a divorce and all this stuff like that, especially when you've been married for a while,
right?
You know, you put yourself, a lot of yourself into it. And so I had to figure out who I was again, what I wanted to do, where I wanted to be, the whole nine yards.
Okay.
So this album was basically back to square one, but not back to square one because I still had my life experiences up to that point,
right.
musically as well as life itself. So the musicians that I worked with before in the past, you know, most of them had gone on and, you know, I've all become famous or working with famous people and stuff like that, whereas there was a period of time between that previous album and this one where, you know, I was focused on life and not so much focused on music. So I myself fell through the cracks. Nobody pushed me through the cracks, but I fell through the cracks.
Right.
So I was picking myself back up, found some young musicians that were willing to work with me. And basically, for lack of a better way of saying it, I had to do it on my own.
Right.
You know, which was therapeutic for me because I had to show myself that this is what I really wanted to do. And it's always been my passion, but, you know, I just let life get in the way.
Right.
So now I'm back focused and I'm starting over. I got a group of young musicians that was willing to work with me. And I learned a lot from that experience of doing a lot of it, you know, on my own with the assistance of these musicians.
Okay.
So that album is called Perfect Imperfections. The reason why I call it that is because I believe that that album is perfect the way that it is because of the imperfections. The imperfections musically, the imperfections of in terms of my lack of experience in terms of doing everything myself, but also the imperfections of my life because, like, when you sing, for me, I know I'm singing my life experiences either through original music or music that I'm drawn to that I'm able to express myself through. And the song that was, I guess, my favorite or most significant is Body and Soul.
Okay.
Body and Soul is another one of those songs when I first started singing jazz that I had to learn in school. But the song grew with me over the years because in college, you know, before I was married, I hadn't lived a lot that I didn't know about life. But at that point in my life, I understood more what the lyrics were talking about and where, you know, what the journey was, and I was able to express it. And again, it's therapeutic for me, but I think people could feel where I was coming from because I lived it.
Right,
So that's imperfection.
I like what you said. I don't mean to cut you off, but you said something that was very, very vital, and I need people to hear that. When you were doing this album, Perfect Imperfections, two things. You said it was therapeutic and that you learned from it through the lack of your experience. Man, that touched me. Can you just elaborate just a little bit more on the going forth, even though you had the lack of experience?
it goes back to me being from a child. I always knew, like looking back, I always knew in my mind what I really wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody would always tell me, oh, you can't do that, or, oh, you need to do this, you know, so you can have something to fall back on. And just, you know, and life. You know, as you're getting older and you get different responsibilities, life challenges you with what you say you believe in.
Come on.
And so it's a back and forth kind of thing. You said you wanted to do this. Okay. Well, you know, so I don't know how to call it, a higher spirit, God, or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, whatever people believe in.
Right.
That force, when you put that energy on the atmosphere, it's going to challenge you to see if that's really what you want.
That's before you
receive the blessing.
That's right.
You know, so that's basically what I have experienced, am experiencing, and will experience.
Right. I got you.
Right.
All right. Go ahead to number four.
I don't know if that helped.
No, that helped. That helped.
Okay. Number four. So, okay. Perfect imperfections, then evolving is next.
Okay.
So the next album is Evolving. So I've been in New Orleans for, you know, about a year or so.
Okay.
And I'm starting to become more focused in my life in terms of organizing it, putting things in order for myself, and also my passion and my drive for what I've always loved starts to grow stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you don't have different distractions, it's easier to see clear where you want to go or you desire to go. And I'm like, you know, I'm over 50. And I'm like, I want this. I don't care how old I am.
Right.
I'm going for this, like, full tilt, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that is another project where I had to initiate things on my own. You know, I call it the Steve Harvey factor, because I remember back when he first got his show, he made a statement about, I guess somebody asked him about, him becoming successful and stuff like that. And he said, you know, sometimes you have to literally walk off the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
You may feel like you're falling, but as long as you stay focused, you will fly.
All right.
And so that was part of my motivation in terms of just like to keep, you know, because nobody was like saying, oh, we want to help you. Da, 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 da. I was still pretty much on my own.
Right.
You know, because when you're younger, that like, oh, you say I sing, and then everybody wants to sign you and all that.
Right.
That's not real life.
Right.
So I had already been past all that. So it's like, okay, I got to do this for me.
Right.
And they'll figure it, they'll catch on later. So I started creating that album with that group of musicians that I had from before. And then I was offered a hand by a gentleman by the name of Donald Harrison, who's a very famous saxophonist from New Orleans. He used to play with a gentleman by the name of Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers.
Okay.
As well as he along with another gentleman from New Orleans, Terrence Blanchard.
Okay.
Had a group together back in the 90s as well. So he had a song that I wrote lyrics to. He said he would play on the album, so he played on the album, and that was very motivating, and it helped lift me up, not because it's like, ooh, you have this person on there, but
right.
In terms of, that was a friend of mine who I respected very much, lifted me up to make me, to reassure me, this is what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
So that was a beautiful experience, you know. And looking back on the album, I mean, there are things I would have changed, but
right.
Overall, I was very pleased with the product. Off of that album, actually, I lost another one of my mentors who's near and dear to me,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Ellis Marsalis. He's the patriarch of the Marsalis family, Winton and Branford and everybody.
Right.
He played back when I was in college, and then when I got out of college, I used to sing with him here in New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
And so over the years, I was like, I really want to record with you. You know, I really want to do a record with you. So when I came back, and I asked him, I said, well, I just really want to have some kind of document with you on it.
Right.
And so he agreed to play the record. So we actually recorded two songs. So I released one of those songs called Never Let Me Go with him. Before the record was actually released, he passed away
due
to COVID. So that definitely has a bears a great significance to me. And I still have the other song I haven't released yet. I don't know when I'll release it, but yeah. So Never Let Me Go is the song that's special to me on that album.
Okay.
The next album, or I did the next album, I was like, you know, coming up in high school and even in college, outside of doing the jazz ensemble and stuff like that, I did a lot of R&B gigs. And then I still was doing like corporate band stuff, so that's a lot of R&B, pop, rock, all kinds of. And I was like, I've never documented that. I said to myself, I want to record an R&B record.
Right.
And everybody from top to bottom said, oh, you can't, if you do a jazz, you can't do an R&B record. And blah, 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 you're going to confuse your audience, blah, 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 blah. And again, I'm at a point in my life, you know, I'm over 50.
That's right. That's right.
Because like, I cut off that little, you know, that little voice in your head.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You know, there was a point in my life where I stopped listening to that that voice. That voice is, again, to me, that voice is, you know, the supreme being, God, whatever you want to call him. But, you know, as I was figuring out who I was again and putting my life back together again, I found that voice again.
Right.
You know, so I began to listen to that voice. That voice was telling me to do what I'm passionate about. Like, that this is a part of who I am.
Right.
Express it. So I met somebody over the years through my cousin who, I don't know if you're aware, my cousin is Don Richard, who was a part of Making the Band, Danity Kane, Diddy Dirty Money, you know, that whole stuff.
Okay.
So I met a friend of hers who was actually a producer, you know, in the beginning of her solo career. His name, well, we call him Drewski. So I met him years ago, and I called him and asked him, like, you know, I need help with this. You know, will you help me? And he was willing to help me. He's a young, way much younger than me.
Right.
So he helped me and guided me to put together this R&B project. It's all, you know, our original music. It helped me therapeutically in terms of, like, digging inside myself and releasing certain things.
Right.
You know, pain, happiness, goals, wishes, all that kind of stuff. It, you know, it began to really cleanse me.
Right.
So that album did a lot for me.
What was the name of it?
That album is called Back to Love.
Okay.
And I meant that in different ways. You know, one of Back to Love is, like, beginning to fall in love with me and who I am.
Right.
And then also not forgetting about being able to love. I'm still working on that part.
Okay.
But to love again. And, you know, that whole shebang.
Right. Got you.
So off of that album, the song that I love the most almost didn't make the record.
Oh, wow.
We were almost finished mixing the album. And I was inspired to write this song called Heart's Desire. That voice told me, you know, you need to go ahead and do this. Don't wait.
Right.
So we recorded it, and then I put it out there. And that's my favorite song, Heart's Desire, off of that album.
All right. So
where are we at?
Are we now,
so now
at 2702, the new project?
2702, yes. That is 2702 is the most recent project. So, you know, the first time I ever saw Diane Reeves perform live, when I see singers of all types, you know, perform, I'm not just like listening as a listener or whatever. Like, I'm really like studying them.
Right.
To see the things I don't like, or I would do this, or I wouldn't do this. Or,
right.
Oh, that's interesting. That kind of a. So the first time I saw Diane Reeves perform years ago, I remember she struck me because I was like, I saw her seamlessly flow between R&B and jazz like it was nothing. And I don't know, like, if you're not a vocalist, you may not really understand what I'm
saying. Right.
But there's a different headspace that you sing in when you're singing like R&B or pop music or rock or jazz. And to transition, going back and forth in between those things, it's a certain art to that. Not even skill, it's just an art to that.
Right.
When I heard her, in my mind, I made this note, like, that's what I want to do right there.
Okay.
And so I'd come to this point where it's like, okay, you know, I've sung R&B most of my life. I've never documented, so I'm going to do this album. So I did the R&B, but I said, I still love the jazz. I'm not, like, going away from it.
Right.
You know, so This is the transition back into the jazz.
Okay.
Or, you know, what people call jazz or Black American music. So this album, I wanted to show growth from the last jazz album, which was Evolve. And so I asked a friend of mine, his name is Jameson Ross. He's a drummer from Florida, but he lives here. He married somebody from here in New Orleans. He also is a drummer for Snarky Puppy, for Boz Skaggs. He's displayed everywhere, you know, and he's a vocalist and a drummer, incredible vocalist and drummer. So I asked him if he would produce the next record, and he agreed. What he did was put me in, for lack of a better way of saying it, he put me like in a little boot camp type thing. So in terms of me developing my writing, pushing me to grow, because I told him I wanted to grow, I wanted to develop myself. So that's exactly what he did. He helped me grow in my writing and my expression of my music. It becomes more of, you know, more and more of who I am.
Right.
That I'm releasing, because life has a way of throwing dirt on certain parts of your life, and it's like, okay, we need to dust off. That's the beauty. The dirt, as well as the clean, is the beauty of a part of what makes you who you are.
Right.
So he helped me feel more comfortable being able to express that. So this record, when we went in to record it, when I tell you, there was just something very special about this. This was the absolute best recording session I've ever experienced in my entire life.
Wow.
I just felt like this is a very special project. And I'm just really hoping, praying that people really get it, because you'll get to know me a little bit more, but also I'm trying to be very vulnerable and open to people where I can touch their emotions and maybe hopefully inspire them, or, you know, let them know they're not alone.
Right.
Let them, you know, let them know that they can be happy, or, you know, whatever that is. I really want to reach people, and I want people to connect with it the way that I connect with it. That, in a nutshell, is 2702.
So where did you get the title, though, 2702?
Okay, that didn't happen until at the end of the session. I had a videographer there filming us. Some of that stuff is on YouTube. I haven't released all of it. I released like 3 or 4 parts of it.
Okay.
But basically, we were doing these interviews, and Jameson was asking me questions. I was already very emotional because, like I said, the session, I can't even really describe to you the feeling that I had. I was just very open. I was very raw.
Right.
And so he asked me these questions. I cannot remember the question. I'd be lying to you.
It's
but
okay.
The answer was, I referred to the home that I grew up in, and that was 2702 Muskogee Street. You know, both my parents have passed, so that was like my happy place.
Right.
You know, I felt love. I loved, you know, I knew I was safe and secure.
Right.
You know, those are people that I know that, you know, loved me for who I was, and I loved them for who they were without any kind of conditions.
Yes, sir.
You know, before life hit me.
Right.
So if you check out YouTube, you'll know exactly what the question is. You know, it really, it almost, well, it was breaking me down. I was trying not to cry.
It's but all right.
I said, you know, 2702, and then he was like, that sounds like your album title. I was like, you know what? You're right.
Wow.
You know, because it basically encapsulates my life. A great part of the root is there. That's where it started.
Man.
And that's the journey of this album, takes me through that in my writing, just in reflecting on my life and all the stuff like that. But my favorite song is a song that I wrote about my mother. I'm an only child.
Okay.
Both of my parents passed. The song's called Jerry. And I wrote it on one of those days where I was feeling, I know I'm a grown man.
It's okay.
But I have 2 grown daughters that, you know, they're adults now. But I feel very alone. Sometimes I feel left behind because my parents are gone.
Right.
You know, and, you know, there are periods where you don't feel like nobody loves you. It came from a very sad moment that I was experiencing, but it turned out to be a very beautiful moment. And on the record, we cut it off, but at the end, I made it all the way to the end, and then I broke down completely. We kind of cut off part of, you can hear some of it at the end, but that's my heart there. So yeah, that's my favorite song, Jerry.
Man, I thank you so much for sharing, and I get it. like I said, you know, I lost my mom, and, you know, I was just telling my friend this was a good Mother's Day that passed, because sometimes I struggle. So I get it. I get
it. Oh, yeah. Me too.
Yeah. How was it?
Sure.
Your experience at Lincoln's Jazz Center? I mean, I've been to shows. There's the essence and just the aura is just simply amazing. But how much more amazing is it to play there?
It's an incredible experience for any musician or vocalist. I mean, it taught me how I was supposed to be treated.
Ooh, okay.
It really did.
Good
it
stuff.
Really did. And, yeah. And it gave me, you know, certain things to aspire to in terms of, like, with my own group, how to treat my own group.
Right.
How to make sure you take care of these certain, you know, just different things. I learned way more than just the music.
Right.
And that was even with, like, working with Terrence Blanchard and working with Nicholas. I learned all kinds of things about different aspects of the business, you know, which are priceless.
Right.
But the Lincoln Center experience was, that's definitely top tier for me.
Right.
My life experience.
Wow.
You know.
Wow. Now, you've lent your talents to a few film projects, TV, and commercial projects. How did that come about?
Different people, when I was in Chicago, before they started, you know, technology has really taken over completely. Chicago was like one of those cities that housed a lot of commercial work, voiceover work, and stuff like that.
Okay.
So I had friends that I sang with, you know, in different groups that worked in that industry that were from Chicago that I was able to get those opportunities. The HBO movie, that was through Terrence, because Terrence was who did the music for the baseball movie, Soul of the Game. And then the last thing I did for the TV series, one of my friends from college was the musical director on that, and wanted to, when I was working on my R&B record, wanted to use one of those songs, so they licensed one of my songs to be in the TV series. McDonald's and Folgers I did while I was in Chicago.
Okay. Now, can you just tell everybody how important relationships are? Because everything you've done, I love how you say, you know, someone recommended me, or I called for a favor. How important is it to just be kind in this, to be kind?
It's almost more important than you having talent.
Okay, sir.
Because there are people.
Okay, sir. I like that.
Because in some circles, you don't even have to have talent. You have the right connection.
Right.
Or you're in the right place at the right time, and the opportunity is given to you.
Yes.
But it's a plus when you do have a gift and you're prepared for that situation.
Oh, my God.
Then it only elevates you even more.
Did you hear that? Be prepared. Be prepared. We like to help our listeners. Now, you mentioned something about, you know, our digital age. So both R&B and jazz are well genres of music. And with the whole AI situation that we've seen with hip hop, how now you can just, you know, use someone else's voice, use a voice. How are you feeling about that? Do you think that AI can honestly replace true authentic artistry, or will it make true authentic artistry flourish even more?
From my humble opinion, I believe AI being used that way has nothing to do with artistry.
Right.
It's another way for the machine to take the few pennies that the artist receives from them. Just like, you know, with the development of the streaming.
Right.
You know,
right.
Where or you are already getting 25 cents, 30 cents.
Right.
You know, if you were really big, 50 cents per record, now you're not even getting a cent.
Mm.
And then these past few generations, they don't understand the significance of actually purchasing music.
Right.
Even purchasing streaming.
Right, right.
They'll go on YouTube and strip the song off of YouTube. They won't go purchase it.
Now, are jazz festivals treating you guys right? And is it hard to get on or be a part of the jazz festivals?
Independent artists?
Yes, sir.
Well, let's deal with the whole jazz, the quote-unquote jazz aspect of it.
Okay.
in my humble opinion.
Yes, yes, sir.
I always have to preface that because I don't know everything. Back in the 80s and before then, when they said jazz festival, the majority of the artists were actually of that genre. They always would have other things too, but the majority of it was that. Nowadays, they call them, you know, jazz festivals. There's hardly anything there.
Gotcha.
I remember when the Essence Festival here in New Orleans first started.
Mm-hmm.
There were a certain amount of slots that were given to local musicians that would play in the super lounges, and then the big names would play on the main stage.
Right.
And they've gone from being, you know, owned by us to being sold to them to being back owned by us. But now, if you look, and I know they're just starting, this is like the second year that they're being owned by us again, but like they have to rebuild that whole thing again.
Right.
They have some artists, yeah, you know, but then all the big artists are gone.
Right.
And the locals are gone. You have some, you know, cool groups in there which were always there, but you don't have the two ends anymore. They really all should be called, like, all these, like, well, the ones that say smooth jazz, this,
right,
that.
Right.
They should all be just called music festivals. All music festivals. And it would be more palatable because it's like, this is not, you know,
yeah.
We get pushed to the back.
Right, right.
Independence pushed to the back as well.
Right. We need to stop that. We need to stop disrespecting the artists and the independent artists especially. I read somewhere and I see that you're getting a lot of love overseas. And overseas seems to always identify pure talent, good talent. They over there, you know, selling the music and doing what they're supposed to do. And I dislike that they accept quality music over there rather than here in the U.S. If you like someone and they have good music, why is it so difficult to just say, I love this song, this is a great project? I mean, just as we started this, I let you know I am a fan, I love your music.
Thanks.
How does that make you feel that overseas you get more love than here?
First of all, it took me totally by surprise, and that really took off with the R&B record.
Okay.
Because with that record, I had a number one, a number three, and a number five.
Wow.
In England. And it really, like, took it took off. I can't even explain it.
Yeah.
But the way the DJs explain it to me is that they're not as, I guess, as regulated.
Oh, okay.
And I'm saying okay. As in the United States.
Right.
So I don't think it's so much that, like, if the American stations in general,
right,
especially the ones that are owned by larger companies that own like 10 to 12 stations.
Right.
You know, if those DJs in those parts of the country were allowed to play what they like or what the people in the area were asking to hear, then you would hear a difference. I'm definitely hoping to grow more, you know, this time around in terms of American audiences.
Right.
I mean, there are pockets, but I need the pockets to start spreading.
Right.
So I'm working on, you know.
Well, we're thankful that, you know, we came across, and as we say, once a key player, always a key player. So you are always welcome to come back and share your story
Thanks
with us.
So much.
And again, I love the album. We will push it. Let people know go ahead.
I apologize for this, so I just want to make sure I'm halfway done working on my R&B record. I haven't started back working on it yet, but probably towards the end of the summer, I'll be working on that. So there's another R&B record coming as well.
So, Roderick Hopper, let everybody know your social media and how they can get in touch with you.
Okay. My website is www.roderickharper.com. My social media Instagram is the letter I, A-M, Roderick Harper. Either one is fine because I send everything through all of my social media.
So I thank you so much for visiting with us. And definitely, I love your transparency. And as we say, I know it's going to help somebody. So thank you so much for stopping by.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and we appreciate you.
All right.
All right.